Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares miraculous stories, offering a clearer view of the universal laws of energy for knowing life on many levels and for reaching our full human potential while exploring the seen and unseen dimensions. Today I welcome Robert Salas, author of Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, who offers extensive testimony and documentation by military officers and airmen of their eyewitness accounts of UFO occurrences, alien abductions, and threats to military installations. Hello, Robert. Thank you for joining me.
Hello, Cheryl. It's great to be with you today.
You know, Robert, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, we seek to understand the mysteries of human life, the universe, and the energy of creation, and to go beyond the ordinary into the extraordinary study of human and spiritual nature, never doubting that what the mind can imagine is possible on some level of consciousness. And in learning more about who we are as spiritual and physical beings, we may be able to open our minds and hearts to greater realities of life, love, acceptance, and greater truths. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Robert Salas, a graduate of the USAF Academy with a master's degree in aerospace engineering, now retired from a career in the Air Force, has conducted massive research and will discuss 6 decades of hair-raising UFO occurrences and provide ample evidence that the government and military have maintained secrecy and some distortions of this truth. His objective, I believe, is to help us understand the possibilities for achieving a more humane and cooperative world community, always moving forward towards progress, understanding, truth, and peace. Robert, I often ask my guests to think back to a moment in their childhood, an experience or memory, as I have found that many of our goals, our values, our interests in life present themselves early on. So think back for a moment and tell us something of your beginning in life.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I guess I had a bit of a difficult childhood. I grew up in a low-income area in Los Angeles, and I guess I had to be a strong assistance to my mother because my dad was incapacitated most of the time. He was an alcoholic. I think that made me a lot stronger. You know, my mother's faith, I think, helped me a lot as I was growing up. She was very religious, she was Catholic. She had a strength, she had an inner strength, I think, that really inspired me and helped me stay on the straight and narrow, so to speak, and work hard.
She definitely gave you confidence in yourself and trust in a higher power or a life force, or perhaps that we're very much more than this physical world. I'm sure she imparted that to you. And you were a sensitive kid. Many of the guests and authors on my show have had similar experiences to what you just described. And I think we're born with a life plan and a destiny, and it shows up very early in those experiences that we remember, as you just related. So that was your way to go forward into the work you would eventually become dedicated to and help to bring in a new understanding through your mother's faith, I would say.
Yeah, I think she inspired me as far as being a role model.
So let's fast forward now to March 24th, 1967, a UFO encounter while you were in the Air Force. Can you tell us something about being at Malmstrom AFB?
Yeah, Malmstrom Air Force Base is a nuclear weapons base, nuclear missiles. They had Minuteman missiles at the time, Minuteman I. First generation of the in an intercontinental ballistic missile. They did have Atlas missiles before then, but this was more of a large production of missiles. We had many nuclear bases at the time. I was a missile launch officer at March 24, 1967. I was on duty at Oscar Flight, which is about 100 miles east of Lewis, of Great Falls, Montana, near Lewistown, Montana. We had an underground facility, about 60 feet underground. They were just two of us in a capsule underground. We had control of 10 nuclear missiles, and we had security guards upstairs. Late in the evening, maybe early morning possibly, it was still dark out. I get a call from my security guard upstairs telling me there's strange lights in the sky flying unusual patterns, flying very fast and stopping on a down reversing course. They were obviously not meteors, and they were not aircraft that he knew about. So he wanted to report it to me, and I kind of dismissed the report. I didn't think too much of it. I hung up, and then about 5 minutes later, he calls back, and this time he's screaming into the phone. He's obviously frightened. And he's telling me the guards are all out looking at the front gate. Above the front gate, there's a glowing red object hovering there, pulsating reddish light. They were frightened. They didn't know what to think of it. They couldn't make out the structure of the craft.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it because we were obligated to stay underground. We were locked in for 24 hours.
So the people above the ground saw it, and they let you know. Okay. You were under the ground. Okay. Protecting the missiles. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what happened to the missiles?
Yeah, well, as I hung up the phone, I told them to make sure nothing gets in the area, in the gated area. I hung up the phone, about to tell my commander about the phone calls, and all of a sudden the missiles started shutting down. We lost all 10 of them within seconds.
That means they were non-functional, correct?
Non-functional. They were disabled. Guidance and control system failure.
What force on earth could do something like that?
Well, that's the point. There was no technology that I knew about that was able to penetrate a strictly shielded cables, shielded from electromagnetic interference. And they were about 60 feet underground. They would have had to somehow send a signal to each of those cables going to each missile individually.
So this installation was prepared to protect those missiles and keep them functional. And nothing on this earth should have been able to turn them down.
Exactly. Nothing should have been able to affect them.
All right. I understand that. And I believe that a week before this, something happened at another facility not that far away, another nuclear facility. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. That was a very similar incident. It happened on March 16th, 1967. What was it, March 17th?
The fact is that there were two episodes like this.
Same
right.
thing happened, only they had maintenance people and security guards at the site, and UFOs overhead. They were reported to the man in charge there at the Echo Flight, and within seconds, all 10 of their missiles shut down while UFOs were seen overhead. So within the span of a week, or about 8 days, we lost 20 missiles while UFOs were overhead. So this is what I've been writing about and speaking about for over 20 years.
What's the possibilities that this could have occurred? And weren't there also people, civilians, who reported seeing exactly what was seen by the military? I know there was one truck driver, Ken Williams, who saw this large dome-shaped lighted object while driving near Belt, Montana, not far. And then there was another highway patrolman who reported seeing the same thing. Now, in later years, I am aware from your writing in your book that over 1,500 reported sightings in the Washington area were documented, and there was a General John Samford, who was Director of Air Force Intelligence, and he told the people asking questions that there are many forms of natural phenomena that could cause people to see what really wasn't there.
Samford was trying to come up with an alternate explanation for what happened in Washington, D.C. In the early 50s, 51 and 52, actually 52 was a big flap, over the span of a week, I think, where multiple sightings of UFOs over the nation's capital. Many people saw them. They even scrambled jets against them, gave them orders to go ahead and fire on these objects, these flying lights, to no avail. Excuse me. This is well documented, and again, Samford, being head of Air Force Intelligence, was trying to cover this up as best he could.
Why do you think there was a need at that time to cover up some of these incidents? If we go back to World War II and what was happening historically in the world, what might have been some of the thinking of some of these people to try to cover up what was being reported? You know, first of all, media was not the way it is now. I mean, they didn't have cell phones and instant pictures and Facebook. So, I mean, it was limited what could be reported. So tell us why you think there was a cover up.
The key case, I think, is the Roswell incident that happened around July 3rd, 1947, Roswell, New Mexico. There is ample evidence and hundreds of witnesses, literally, that substantiate the fact that the Roswell incident did occur, where one or two craft crashed. There was recovery of some bodies. One was supposed to have survived, one of the bodies of the aliens. And debris from the crash was retrieved. At first, this was reported by the Air Force as being a crash saucer. They mentioned that. And then the next day, it was they reneged on that report and said, no, it was just a weather balloon. So obviously, there was a concerted effort to cover this up. And to try to answer your question, I mean, we had just completed World War II. This was, you know, they just finished at the end of 1945, and then this base, Roswell Army Air Base, was the only nuclear weapons base in the country at the time. It was the home to the 509th Bomber Wing, which was the bomber wing that dropped the two nuclear weapons on in Japan. So, again, here we have UFOs, in this case, crashing over a nuclear weapons site. So there seems to be, that's just one of a long string of connections of UFO sightings over nuclear weapons bases, which I go into in my book.
I know you mentioned there was a Colonel Blanchard who wanted the discovery of this craft. Many people listening might know about the Roswell incident at that time, and he wanted this discovery of the craft and living creatures not from Earth announced, and he tried to do the right thing. However, Washington was afraid. Let's just say it as it is. They were afraid coming out of a world war. We had dropped a nuclear bomb. We were still having trouble with the Russian communist nation. And there was just fear that we would get ourselves involved in something that we didn't understand and we couldn't contain. So I think it was basically out of fear that there was this cover.
Well, you mentioned Daryl Sanford in 1952 giving a press conference.
Yes.
Right by his side was General Ramey, R-A-M-E-Y, who was also the general that overrode Blanchard. Ramey was Blanchard's immediate superior. And Ramey was the one that made him rescind that initial message to the press.
So he did it two times? He was there,
yes,
present?
Yes, Ramey was involved in the cover-up at Roswell, and then again in 1952 over the cover-up in Washington, D.C.
All right. Now, apparently, other foreign governments have tried to open their secret UFO files to the public. The U.S. hasn't done this. So tell us something about Wilbert Smith in Canada. He's one of them. There was also an incident in Peru and England. And why is it that was all covered up also?
Yeah, well, other countries claim to want to release information. The Wilbert Smith story is a little bit separate. That was 1950, and he just happened to be on loan from the Canadian government as an engineer. And he was told, because he was working on a classified project with the U.S. on what he called gravimetrics, or the study of propulsion-based systems based on gravity. And he was told that there was a secret group that was covering up the UFO information. He wrote this to his superior. It was a classified message but later released. So it's, again, validation that the U.S. was working with other countries to cover up this information. But more recently, there have been efforts, supposedly by Great Britain and in other countries, including Brazil and Argentina, to release and to cooperate with UFO aficionados or groups that are studying question to cooperate with them and release data.
Yeah, I think there was an incident, Brent Waters Base in England in 1980. There was an incident in Peru. And we know, they sort of knew that flying saucers exist, and they didn't know how they were being operated. And there was a concentrated effort by a small group. But we know it was of tremendous significance, but it wasn't released to the general public. So let's go on. If you were to speculate for what purpose these extraterrestrials are visiting our planet, what would you think?
I do think one of their purposes, I won't speak for all of their purposes, but one of their purposes is to bring attention to the nuclear weapons issue. And I believe that strongly because of all the incidents that have been reported of UFOs over nuclear weapons facilities, not only weapons bases, but also production facilities such as Hanford Nuclear Site, where they produce plutonium, and also nuclear reactor sites. So they are appearing at these sites, and they want to be seen, they want to be noticed. And of course, my incident in particular showed that they were able to shut down my missiles. I think it was just a message.
Maybe it's just a message that we shouldn't be concentrating our efforts on things of destruction, but should be concentrating our efforts on growing the planet into a more viable, functional, compassionate world of higher evolved humans. Maybe they are peaceful people who wish us to go in that direction, and are showing us it's not so important to have those kind of things anymore. Could be.
Well, Yes, I agree. And these nuclear weapons are not weapons of war. They're weapons of mass destruction. In other words,
right.
They would be totally destructive to civilization and the planet itself. They couldn't possibly be used in a real war because they would quickly escalate into a massive destruction of all living things.
So if these are an evolved extraterrestrial population who come in with wisdom and peace, of course they wouldn't want us to be working on that. They'd want us to be working on issues that could grow and make a more beautiful world, healthy world.
I agree.
And I'm hoping that's who these people are. Now, this Dr. John Mack, who's a Harvard University psychiatrist who helped and counseled hundreds of abductees, he noticed that many of the children who had been taken and returned had many paranormal abilities. They were telepathic, they were intuitive, psychic, many different gifts. And it's possible that these beings might want to help us evolve and use more spiritual gifts of the universe, perhaps, to bring humanity to another level.
That's another way of looking at that. You're correct. Many of the people that have been taken or abducted come back with special gifts or are... And you could use these gifts, of course, to bring more unity to humanity so that we could work together. That's the major issue as I see it right now. We're too concerned as nation states, individual nations are worried about their self-interests. And what we really need right now, because of the enormous problems that we're facing, is to be able to work together in peace. And possibly they're trying to instill that in us in various ways, a higher level of consciousness of who we are.
I have interviewed many people who have had near-death experiences and have connected with higher beings. They call them higher beings of light, and they have also come back with greater awareness of what they want to offer the planet and people and what they want to do in life in a more cooperative and peaceful way. So it's almost a similar comparison here. When our energy leaves our body and goes into a higher dimension, perhaps we come back with a greater awareness of the universe and our human and divine potential. So they're similar that way. Now, Robert, you wrote, "There are two things I know about the UFO phenomenon. One is that real objects of unearthly origin are visiting our planet. The other is that the phenomenon of people being abducted is a reality." Can you tell us one of the abduction stories that you're aware of? I recently interviewed Betty Andreasen. Yes, wonderful woman. We had a wonderful show. It hasn't even aired yet. So you're aware of that.
Yes, I'm very aware of Betty's story. There's another woman by the name of Susie Hansen from New Zealand. She's written a book, The Soul Connection, I think it's called. It's an excellent book. I would highly recommend it. But it tells about her story when she was abducted since she'd been about 12 years old. And very vivid memories of the abductions. I also had my own experience. I write about this in the book. I don't know if you read that part of it. It's very brief. but in 1985, I was asleep with my wife and two children in a particular house we both remember in Manhattan Beach, California. Sometime in the middle of the night, I wake up and see a bluish light coming from my living room. I tell my wife I'm going to get up and investigate because I'm afraid somebody's in the house. So I start to get up, and then all of a sudden I'm paralyzed. I can't move. And I turn to my wife, ask for her help, and she's unconscious. at this point. And next thing I recall is seeing figure in the doorway. I couldn't make out the face, but it had a hood. It was a hooded figure. Then I'm aware that there's others in the room, although I can't recall what they look like. I recall that they were small. And then lifted off the bed and floating towards the window in the bedroom, and then actually going right through the window. I don't know how crazy that sounds. But
no, it doesn't sound crazy to me, because as a small child, I remember being very frightened by what was at my window and feeling energy on my arms. And I would go down a long hallway to climb into bed with my mother and father, and I was terribly frightened. So I know there are things that are possible that are not just of the imagination. And you would have been visited because you were already studying all this and very interested in giving the truth to the public. So it makes sense that they would have come to let you have an experience.
Right after my incident occurred, which was 1967, I was ordered never to speak about this. And so I was still under that order in 1985. So I wasn't actively speaking out on UFOs at that time.
No, but you had your experiences already.
Yes, I had had the experience at Malmstrom.
Right, right.
And so they might have had that interest in me from that point on.
I would think if they were super intelligent, they would be aware of people who they wish to contact, who would be part of this evolution for improving the human consciousness. And I know you were present at an event where there were actual UFOs and the shutdown of a military installation, and you are aware that there was some type of cover-up. So I think you spent so much time and effort in researching all this because I think that you feel that the new discoveries and concepts are being kept from the public and our general scientific knowledge because it's under strict control by a small select group. And this situation is ripe for corruption and certainly counterproductive to our democratic government. I think you're concerned about things like that and wish there to be a more open-minded discussion and lots of people involved in all of this, which I would agree with you. I want to thank you, Robert Salas, for your concise and clear reporting of events that you have experienced and for providing other witness accounts which support your beliefs that UFO reports are real and reports of these happenings have been recorded for over 60 years now. And perhaps even longer. For more information and to purchase Unidentified the UFO Phenomenon, please go to spiralgalaxy.org. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's my website.
Good.
You can order
there,
or you can order on Amazon.com also.
Good. Okay. In summarizing today's episode of the many related incidents and reports surrounding sightings of what we call unidentified flying objects, for lack of another name, it seems logical to deduce that there is more to heaven and earth than we can ever hope to imagine. The possibilities are infinite, and Robert wrote what I also believe. He said, "My thinking about the UFO phenomenon has evolved to where I now don't immediately discount any story that I hear. I try to be more open to the possibility that some new story could have validity, and I take time to consider it based on the totality of my own experience and research." Robert, that is my sentiment exactly. 20 years ago, I was not aware of my ability to meditate and download messages from that quantum field of energy or the wisdom of other realities or practice Reiki energy healing, but through miracles, coincidences, and synchronicity and much dedicated effort, I have met many teachers who guided my development for becoming a more empowered and authentic, compassionate human being. I believe that any thought we have can become a reality if the focus and effort to be open-minded and open-hearted is present. If there are forces of intelligent life wishing to work with us and advance our world, it could be a most wonderful and uplifting experience. Robert and I would hope listeners everywhere, in any walk of life, move past their fears and limited reality to see the universe as an evolving source of continuous life and to value all life forms. We hope that the forces that watch over us and hope for a more refined and peaceful spiritual development will one day find that we are able to look past secrecy and denial and accept all truth, always hoping for a more cooperative union between all people. That could be a new beginning and new world for all. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about spirituality, science, medicine, education, the arts and music, and all things that lead to working outside the box with clarity and new vision. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.